$2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon, or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
I'm Kamaya.
I'm Amira.
I'm Kaya.
I'm Kamaya.
And you're listening to WPFW Washington.
Another man done gone. Another man done gone from the county farm. Another man done gone.
Huh? I don't know. What? I'm just going across the street.
Shut your mouth.
Oh, no. What'd I do?
Turn around. Put your hands behind your back. Let's go.
The jury of your peers, having found you guilty, 10 years.
What? Come on. Get that set.
I was in jail, too, man. It's cold-blooded in the jail. You go down there looking for justice. That's what you find. Just us.
Welcome to another edition of Crossroads Today. Now, here's your host, Roach Brown.
Good morning, and thank you for coming, tuning in to the Tuesday of every month. The first Tuesday, we do a two-hour special live from the world-famous Ben's Chili Bowl. But this morning, we have something that needs to be discussed and shared with our listeners. We'll talk about a few things that President Trump has done. But this morning, we have a special guest who's been with us a couple of times in the past, and she's one of our favorite guests. Her name is Dr. Carmen Johnson, and we'll get into that in a minute. But first, we open up at what we call the grapevine, information that you can use, the grapevine. Okay, here we go. What would Trump's executive order on private prisons really do? The order reverses President Biden's ban on private prisons contracts with the Justice Department. Private immigrant detention centers never stop and is expected to grow off the page. On the first day of his second presidency, Donald Trump reversed former President Joe Biden's executive order on private prisons. Biden's order had barred contracts between the Department of Justice and private detention centers. When Biden issued the order in 2021, only about 14,000 federal prisoners were in private facilities, a fraction of the nearly 152,000 federal prisoners. The Bureau of Prisons offered a scant information about Trump's order or whether they would pursue new contracts. Buddy. Trump's new order to expand the death penalty misses key details. The order shows the president desire for more executions, but it's unclear how the administration will carry out his plan, legal experts say. Shortly after being sworn in, President Donald Trump signed an order to expand the death penalty, confirming the widespread expectations that the Department of Justice may seek capital punishment more often under his administration. The first Trump administration carried out more executions than any president in at least a century. But legal experts say the order is short on details about how the administration will carry out its plans in the face of legal and bureaucratic barriers. Key facts about the U.S. black population. The number of black people living in the United States reached a new high of 48.3 million in 2023. That's up a third since 2020. Since 2000, rather, according to a Pew Research Center analysis of government data. For Black History Month, here are key facts about the nation's black population. The black population has grown faster in states that historically have not had many black residents. Utah experienced the fastest growth in its black population between 2010 and 2023, with an increase of 89%. The black population of Arizona, Nevada, and Minnesota each increased by 50% during that period. Trump's order takes aim at transgender people in prison. Few trans people receive gender-affirming housing and care in the Federal Bureau of Prison System. This executive order would make it even harder. Among the dozens of executive orders that President Donald Trump signed on his first day in office for his second term, one targets transgender people incarcerated in the federal prison system. The order instructed the Attorney General and the Secretary of Homeland Security to ensure that males are not detained in women's prisons or immigration detention centers. It went on to mandate that the federal prison system shall ensure that the federal funds are expended for any medical procedures treatment that are not expended for any medical treatment or procedures or drugs for the purpose of conforming an inmate's appearance to that of its opposite sex. Transgender people make up a tiny fraction of those held in federal prison. The only prisons that the president has direct authority over. Among the more than 140,000 people in federal prisons and jails, about 2,000, roughly 1%, identify as transgender, according to the Bureau of Prisons. Well, that Trump is something else. The trans woman who sued the federal prison and won settles her remaining case. Days before Trump's inauguration, the Bureau of Prisons agreed to pay Grace Pinson $95,000 to drop more than a dozen pending lawsuits. Attorneys for the federal prison system agreed last week to pay $95,000 to a transgender woman who had alleged in dozens of lawsuits that she had been abused and mistreated in the custody of both fellow prisoners and staff. The agreement to settle the suits was signed just days before the inauguration of President Donald Trump, who had campaigned on a promise to end federal accommodations and support for trans people. Grace Pinson was featured in a story published by the Marshall Project, Mother Jones, and other publications about the dangers of life in federal prisons for transgender women. The story recounted how Pinson sued the Bureau of Prisons after she was brutally beaten by her cellmate. Prison officials had locked her in a cell with no emergency alarm, with a man serving time for sexual assault. How Biden compares with other recent presidents and appointing federal judges. Following a flurry of judicial confirmations in the final weeks of the 118th Congress, President Joe Biden would end his tenure. He ended his tenure in the White House, having appointed 228 judges to the federal court. That figure includes record numbers of women and racial or ethnic minorities. Biden's total narrowly eclipses the 225 federal judges Donald Trump appointed during his first term as president. Trump, however, will soon be able to add to his tally as he prepares to take office for a second term. The analysis focused only on judges appointed to the 91 district courts and 13 appeals courts governed by the Articles 3 of the U.S. Constitution. Compared with Trump, Biden appointed more district court judges and had fewer appeal court judges and U.S. Supreme Court justices. And that's been what we call the grapevine, information that you can use. The grapevine. Thank you for tuning in. Now we get to the meat of our show. Good morning to our distinguished co-host, none other than Nkechi Taifa. Good morning, counselor. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, Roach and Murphy. How are you? And looking forward to hearing from our guests this morning.
Thank you. Thank you. And our guest this morning is none other than the iconic Dr. Carmen Johnson has championed social, civic, and economic empowerment, leaving a lasting impact on marginalized communities. Guided by her belief that financial responsibility and generational wealth are the foundations of communal success, she has dedicated her life to addressing systemic injustices and uplifting underprivileged population. As a director of Court Watch and Judicial Accountability, a cornerstone deeply inspired by her own conviction as an innocent woman with 3 years of unjust confinement after trial. And in 2020, she founded Helping Ourselves to Transform, a nonprofit advocacy for social justice impacted individuals. And I want to say good morning, good morning, good morning to Dr. Carmen Johnson. And our topic this morning is Income Tax Reconciliation Program, Maryland Fair Taxation for Justice Involved Individuals Act. You worked like a horse on getting this bill passed. And I'm so proud of you, lady, because we met when you first came home. And lady, and I knew the shape you were in and how and what you just been through. It takes a while just to get your head right. And lady, you were fighting and struggling, but you came through. You came through with flying colors. We're so proud of you, Dr. Carmen Johnson. You came out, as most people do, they come out, and even when you're affected or touched by something that alters your life, it's hard not to be committed to that when you come out. And you came out the street out and hit the streets running, lady. You came out in the very next week. You was doing something to try to change the injustices that you went through and other people went through. Thank you for what you're doing with this Tax Reconciliation Act. Good morning, Dr. Carmen Johnson, and how are you? And you have the microphone to explain. What is your bill that you got passed through the Maryland legislature?
Good morning. Thank you for having me today. And the bill has not passed yet. It's Senate Bill 295 and House Bill 634, Maryland Fair Taxation for Justice Involved Individuals Act. And this bill is very important because it affects all returning citizens, whether they know it or not. But my focus is more so on professionals that find themselves, you know, in this injustice system. And when we come home, our voices are not heard. There are not resources out there for professionals. There are no resources or there's no help. And so what you find is most professionals, they just hide their head and they suffer in silence. And I know when I, you know, first came home, the first thing that I had to deal with was Maryland state taxes and also IRS. And the great thing about this bill right here, what it does is it tolls your time of having to file taxes while you're behind the wall. That's the layman way of saying it. And it also opens up an avenue. When you go to sentencing, you get your sentencing papers, you're able to submit your sentencing paperwork to the comptroller's office in order for them to toll your taxes. When your taxes are tolled, that will eliminate any types of fees, penalties, high interest, and things of that nature. Now, in my case, when I went to trial, I was arrested at trial and I was not given the benevolence to handle my affairs. And I came home 3 years later to a financial disaster. I mean, everything was a disaster. And so with people in my situation, they are able to submit their release paperwork to the comptroller's office, and then they will retroact the tolling of the taxes. The other thing is, which is important, the comptroller, we've been working very closely on the language of this bill. And she also agreed that, you know, based on my experience, you know, being suffering from PTSD and not being able to function, the last thing on my mind was taxes. And people, when they come home, they trying to find a job, they trying to find a place to live, they trying to find mental health, they trying to reconcile with their families. I mean, it's so many other things that is conducive to their survival. And so the comptroller Learman was gracious enough to say, okay, we'll give you guys up to 2 years to get yourselves together in order to file your taxes. And so I think that, you know, I thank her for that because she didn't have to do that. And I'm looking forward to working also with Congressman Glenn Ivey. I sit on his advisory board for reentry. So he will be taking up his plight on the IRS side, which is the federal side. I met with his bill drafter in November. And so we're in the process of getting that language together for IRS as well. Thank you.
So you say the bill hasn't been passed, Do you expect it to be passed, or is there any pushback up in the legislation for not having and seeing this bill get passed?
So this is a hot topic. And so what the feedback that I'm getting is people, you know, the senators and the delegates are saying, how did you come up with this bill? I've never heard of this. Or they say, I've never thought of this. And I said, because professionals that find themselves in this situation, they run and they hide and they don't want people to know that they have financial issues, tax issues from the state or IRS. So this is a really hot topic. In the Senate, it was heard, I think it was January 24th, if I'm not mistaken, it was heard. And then in the House of Delegates, it will be heard February the 6th at 1 p.m. So people are interested, including the Republicans.
Tell our audience what happened as quickly as you can. Make it succinct. What happened to you, why you ended up in prison in the first place?
I'm the former housing chair for the State Conference NAACP of Maryland. And so my role in that position was to find out why all of these illegal foreclosures was happening back then. We're talking about the foreclosures that was happening in 2008, 2009, 2010, 2011, 12, 13, 14, and 15. And I found out what was happening. And then I started, you know, calling judges and stuff like that, and calling Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, HUD, calling everybody saying, hey, you need to give this family their house back. You need to stop this foreclosure. I saved over 840-something, 50-something families from illegal foreclosures. And we did get a moratorium from the governor at that time to freeze the foreclosures in the state of Maryland. However, I did not get the photo op. The NAACP did. I got sent to jail.
And how much did they sentence you to?
They sentenced me. They were trying to give me 30 years.
Wow.
And, when I went to trial, the judge gave me 54 months. And I ended up doing 3 years and some months. And, you know, whether it was 3 days or it felt like 30 years to me, you know, and people don't understand what it feels like to be emphatically innocent or wrongfully convicted. People don't think about it. They just automatically assume what you did it. Really? You know, if I'm
back up for a second, I'm sorry, you lost me for a moment, because everything that I heard you say was that you were helping people and helping to expose things and whistleblowing. It sounds like retaliation to me. I mean, I missed something. What in the world was the actual charge that they charged you for that you were in fact innocent of?
They charged me with 24 counts of mortgage bank and conspiracy commit wire fraud. And I had never did a mortgage a day in my life except my own personal mortgage, which I did that through the bank. And they slid me into a real mortgage bank and wire fraud case with 14 foreigners. And that broke my heart, because here it is, I'm an indigenous American. I'm the offspring of Benjamin Harrison. And here it is, they drug me into this case with these foreigners. Why would I steal from my country to give to another country? You can't get more patriotic than me and my family. And it was very, very hurtful, not understanding that when I came home, I was still going to be faced with issues and pain and suffering, because people don't understand the suffering that innocent people or wrongfully convicted people that are professionals go through. We never talk about the professionals. We never talk about the business owners. We never talk about the retired military. We never talk about the certified labor workers. We never talk about the pain and suffering of what we go through. We suffer in silence. We support other initiatives that's dealing with, you know, justice reform, but no one wants to hear what we have to say. And that's really unfortunate, because at the end of the day, whether I'm innocent or not, I went through that experience. My peers are my peers. You know, I don't belong no more in that scholar world. My PhD friends, they say that they understand, but I don't get invited to the parties anymore. They say they still love me, but I don't get invited to the tea parties. I don't get invited to that stuff no more. You know, so it's very, very difficult for that professional to find themselves in this situation, including political figures that find themselves in this situation. Nobody talks about it.
You know, this is interesting that this is one of the few times we've talked about professional people who go to prison. Normally, we've been doing this show, Crossroads. We talk about the average Joe Blow or Jane Doe who got arrested. But for those folk who got PhDs or professional people got their own profession, when they go through just as much traumatic and even worse and more. And when you and I and Mertine met over 5 years ago, when you come out, you talked about PTSD. We got a thing called PISS. Post-incarcerated stress syndrome. And it's the same thing, but it affects people coming out of institutions. And lady, you had it and you fought it. And I was scared for you for a while. We met over at the North Carolina Kitchen one day and you was just so wound up and so tight. And I knew it was going to take a while. And we prayed that you make it through this. And later you came through with fine colors. And not only that, you doing something to make things better for other folk. Question, is this the first bill of its kind in the country, or is any more states doing this taxation bill for justice impact individuals that you know of?
So as of right now, based on the research that my interns have done at Helping Ourselves to Transform, and also we called Prison Policy Initiative and some other data organizations, this will be the first bill. However, I just heard last week that Virginia is trying to do a bill similar to this. Okay, so with my information going out here and around, now people are trying to, and it's okay. But at the end of the day, Maryland is the first that have, you know, this has been filed with the Senate and the House of Delegates, and this will be the first in the United States. And I pray that Maryland will be the first. And I pray that Congressman Glenn Ivey will get our bill passed on the federal side as well.
Okay, the question, go ahead, Mert.
Your book really affected me so much. It just was a part of my heart, the details of it. Would you tell our audience the name of your book? They gotta read the book to know
more about you.
It's no way this hour is gonna do it. Please share that.
You know, the interesting thing is that the name of my book is called The Pretense of Justice. And it was Judge Joe Brown wrote the foreword because he went through my case, through everything. And he was like, oh, man, this is a travesty. And he contacted I did a podcast with someone and he contacted them. He was like, let this woman get in touch with me. So anyway, I ended up doing the book. It came out August 2022. It talks about my family, you know, me being born. And then it ends with different solutions and things of that nature. So it's not just a gritty jail book. It's a spiritual journey. It talks about my sabbatical. My life is a sabbatical, and it talks about that. And I'm very transparent in my book about the pains, about the sufferings, and the things that I have gone through. The interesting thing about it is I've had more people tell me, I said, well, did you finish the book? Well, no, I didn't finish it. But over in the UK, the book is blowing up. Like, you know, it's selling over in the UK, and it's really unfortunate. It's only a few people that say that they finished it. And I'm like, why didn't you finish it? Oh, I got too much other stuff to do. I said that the best part about the book is resolution. Right. That's the best part. I said, y'all missed the resolution aspect of it. But anyway, it's selling in the UK, and all proceeds go to Helping Ourselves to Transform services and programs. And I'm thinking about doing a second book, which entail the horrors, the true horrors of what it feels like and what it is emphatically like being a professional in reentry. It will blow. It just, my mind get blown every day.
This is a field that, as you said, that has been ignored and haven't been discussed. And we got the cases now of a politician being arrested for funds or whatever. And you see that every week in the media. And nobody's been focusing on professionals or even talk about it. We just assumed that everybody was just the average Joe Blow. But folks from all walks of every strata of society wind up in jail. And I'm glad you do this. Question is, this is about taxation. What about those fees that build up when you're incarcerated, like for restitution, for fines, for child support, traffic tickets? Those things build up and accumulate while you're away. Does your bill have any impact on those fines and fees that are imposed on people incarcerated?
Actually, it does not, because this is specifically for taxes. Because taxes take precedence over anything. Mm-hmm. So if anything, this is the powerhouse of financial runs. You know what I'm saying? That's what makes this bill so important. However, there are bills that are out there that are being heard in the Senate and the House of Delegates that's dealing with child support and things of that nature. And the fact of the matter, like you're not able to get your car registered, you're not able to get your driver's license and things of that nature. And I also want to point out and give thanks to Senator McCrae for spearheading this bill in the Senate, and also Comptroller Learman, who has given Helping Ourselves to Transform a liaison for her office. So basically what happens is you will not just be identified as a social security number, you will also come with a story. So if someone was to come to Helping Ourselves to Transform that have this type of interesting story that need to be heard and not just be identified as a social security number, we are able to be able to advocate for them. And then I also want to plug out Kiana Johnson from Life After Release and the support that, you know, she has had in my life, and that, you know, being instrumental. And the fact of the matter is that she's in partnership with Helping Ourselves to Transform as we move this bill along.
Okay, thank you. We got another guest that's joined us for the second half hour. We wanted to get Dr. Carmen in as fast as we can get in and get this information out. So we'll be leaving Dr. Carmen Johnson and going to Dr. Brother Carlisle Holder, who is also a good friend. I just wanted to say, when you came on about a few years ago, we were fortunate enough to have Judge Joe Brown call in. It was one of your supporters. And he spoke very highly of what's going on. And I'm glad that Judge Joe Brown was a part of your situation. And Carmen, want to thank you. And we're working with you, whatever we can do to support what you're doing. Because anybody that does anything to make things better for somebody else, we're on your team. And this is what this is about. You know what I mean? So I want to thank Dr. Carmen Johnson.
And name your book one more time for those people who weren't able to write it yet.
It's called The Pretense of Justice, and it's on by Dr. Carmen Johnson, and it's on Amazon. And thank you very much for having me, and you guys have a great day, and please support the Maryland Fair Taxation for Justice Involved Individuals Act. And we will be bringing this bill to IRS through the Honorable Congressman Glenn Ivey as well. Thank you very much.
You want to leave our audience with a name, a number, or email they can contact you if somebody want to follow up?
They can certainly contact me at 202-674-6300. And you guys create a great day. Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Johnson. Okay. All right, Nikeechi. Now, Nikeechi's going to, before we get to Nikeechi, this is the WPFW 89.3 FM, Crossroads on the Pacifica Radio Network. Crossroads is heard around the world. And thank you for joining in. And if you have a question or comment, the number to call is 202-588-0893. Now we turn to Nikeechi Taifa. Go ahead.
All right, now, thank you so very much, Roach. And I am just so very glad that we are now joined by someone who is just quite totally phenomenal. We're talking about Dr. Reverend Carlisle Holder. And he's going to be, he and his colleague, Vernice Robinson from the Ohio Department of Corrections, are going to be talking about, I'm not sure if it's the third or the fourth or the fifth, but they'll let you know, annual National Returning Citizens Conference that's going to be coming up. And I know it's not coming up till April, but we wanted to get you in early because when we had you in last time, and I know that there were scholarships available, but we had you in late, all those scholarships were taken up. So Dr. Carlisle Holder and your colleague, tell us about this National Returning Citizens Conference, where it's going to be, what's happening, what it's all about.
Well, good morning, listeners.
Good morning.
Good morning to my family, the Bronx, and my sister in Kichi. It's always a pleasure to be back, and I'm so happy that Venice Robinson, the co-chair of the 5th Annual National Returning Citizens Conference, slated for April the 10th and the 11th, 2025, in Columbus, Ohio, with the theme 50 forward, moving forward. As you know, 2024 was sort of the 50th anniversary of mass incarceration in these Americas, and we want to help break that cycle. So we've been doing this work, and we did have our last conference in the DMV, and it was a huge success. So I appreciate Sister Nkechi inviting us early, because we are going to tap out at 400. And we have already had close to 100 register for the conference. So I want to turn it over to my colleague and my protege, Venice Robinson, who is doing a phenomenal job being one of the co-hosts with her agency, the Ohio Department of Corrections. So Venice, why don't you give some folks a flavor about some of the speakers and what they can expect?
Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, all. Thank you for having me here today on your show. I just wanted to make one point of clarification. It is the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction, because we know that rehabilitation is important. We are one of few correctional agencies in this United States who has rehabilitation in their name. So thank you for recognizing us. But I wanted to share, over the course of the 2 days of the NRCC, there will be a plethora of workshops for participants to choose from. We have 32 different workshops along the tracks of education, faith, health and family, housing, law and justice, research and history, technology, and workforce. We receive workshops proposals from many individuals throughout these United States. It also made it very difficult to choose because they were so good in what we received. It's our hopes that participants will be able to benchmark, network, and share. There are many, many individuals who have been system impacted and have changed their trials into testimonies. They have been effectively able to navigate systems to be successful upon their return from incarceration. We are excited. We are engaged. It's like Carlisle said, it is our fifth year, and it's our second year, our third year in person. But we're raising the bar annually each year, because we know that there are many men and women impacted by the criminal justice system, and we want to see a difference. And I mean, it's small crimes to more egregious crimes, but those individuals oftentimes are not who they were at the age of 16. And now they're 35, but may have been sentenced to 20, 30, 40 years in prison. They do come out a different person. And if given the opportunity to bloom, many of them bloom where they are planted. And unfortunately, that's in a prison system, but they show and they make a difference day in and day out. Thank you.
Let me ask you this. Are you a returning citizen, Ms. Robinson?
No, sir. I am system impacted because I've got speeding tickets and I've been pulled over.
I'm definitely system impacted. I got not stopping at a stop sign long enough ticket. So let me stop.
Oh my goodness. So what I do believe in, the values that my parents instilled in me as a child growing up, everybody is somebody's child. And these are people. And typically what I'll see, no shade against men, but mothers will never put their child down. They stand beside them.
Yes.
Maybe because they carried them in the womb for 9 months. But yes, mothers stand behind them. And when I go into these prisons day in and day out, you know, and a man or a woman may tell me, I say, what's your name? I'm Jones, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. What's your name? Did your mama name you Jones? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. No, ma'am. What's your name? You know, because you are somebody's child.
Yeah.
You are important. And most importantly, in my Christian walk, you are a child of God.
You know, we attended the last conference that Carlisle Holder had over in Virginia.
Yes, and I had the pleasure of meeting both of you.
Well, Merry Christmas to you, young lady.
Thank you.
Question is, there's a lot of folk who like to go to this conference, and it's being held in Ohio, and they don't have the funds to pay for the lodging or the transportation. Is there any arrangements being made for those men and women in the DMV area who's listening to our show, for instance, in California, Louisiana, whatever? Because folks are listening all over the country and out of the country. So for those folks who, I know this is a heavy question, how can they participate, or can they get a scholarship or some assistance to attend this well-meaning and interesting conference that we know we need?
So I'll take the question. I'll take that question. Obviously, we have scholarships for registration, and this is not an organization that goes out continually all year and raise money. So we really only raise money for the hosting of the conference.
Okay.
So unless we get sponsorship to cover that, and we do have some sponsorship opportunities, we would love to give back. So we don't keep any profits from the conference. In fact, you know, the conference hasn't been successful in terms of finances, but we do offer scholarships for registrations. At some point, it's my vision that we'll be able, right, to get the attention of particularly those companies that service the criminal justice to see the value in the work that we're doing and how we're trying to transform these men and women through the conferences that we host. So we don't have any lodging and transportation. But if the opportunity do come available, there are some individuals we know that have asked, and if the opportunity presents itself and we can do so, we'll try to do our best. So
okay.
I know how tough it is for returning citizens and the resources and that stuff. We used to try and do it, do parts of it virtually, but that became such an expensive endeavor, and not knowing how many people will participate. So we kind of pull back on the virtual aspect of it. But one of the things we are doing this year is we're gonna take four of the most dynamic workshops each day. And that way folks can go back later on the website, and they can see what was presented.
Question.
And what else, Mr. Brown, what I can share is there are a limited number of scholarships, but once they get there, they will be fed in those scholarships. So they don't have to worry about lunch and dinner on the first day and lunch on the second day. And if we can garner sponsorships for a continental breakfast, we will be sure that we provide that as well. So at least in that scholarship, it does provide some food. I forgot to mention our dynamic keynote speakers for this event.
Oh yeah, who are they?
We have Chef Jeff out of Las Vegas, Nevada, who is a returning citizen himself. He served his time in the federal system. We have Donna Hilton out of New York. She served time as well.
Yes.
In the, I think it was state or federal, forgive me, a number of years, many years. We have Deanna Hoskins,
who
is just as involved, a returning citizen as well. She's actually from Cincinnati, Ohio, so we could not do this conference great pleasure without having one of our own. And then last but not least, we have the Reverend Tony Loudon, who served as the personal pastor to President Jimmy Carter, who was a president of humanity, a president for all kind, a president who lived his life humbly, even till death faced him.
You know, question. We heard Dr. Reverend Tony Lauder when he spoke at Jimmy Carter's funeral, and I was impressed with him. And I thought, but the way he gave his speech and presentation, that this man would be in demand all over the country. I mean, he lit up the whole country with his oratorial abilities. Question, for those men and women who are inside of institutions who are hearing our show, how can they participate, or is there anything available to keep these men and women who is inside the institutions, who's listening to the show and hearing about the conference, who want information on the conference, they'd like to hear, to participate? Has there been anything made, any effort made to reach out to these men and women inside of institutions, or give them a copy of the report that comes from the conference?
So as Mr. Holder indicated previously, it becomes very expensive.
Yes.
And of course, many of our correctional institutions throughout the United States don't necessarily have the technology which would allow for the live streaming or the tap-in, but he did share that the presentations will be recorded, and the four top presentations, and prayerfully, we can get those on those tablets. I know that in Ohio, our incarcerated persons have tablets where they can access podcasts.
See, there you go.
And programming,
there you go.
And things like that. So it's a matter of networking and talking with the right people. And hopefully this conference will be shared virtually. Also, I will also share that in Ohio, we will have some system impacted persons in attendance who are currently in confinement. I know there will be from some transitional houses, but they are confined to that space. We will have some of those men and women in attendance. I'm not sure about our other facilities yet. I know that we can't mix the youth with adult, so we, you know, won't be able to have them all, but prayerfully we will get the replays, the rebroadcast available on tablets throughout these United States.
I just want to ask this, Reverend Holden, I'm calling you Reverend because you my man. You my man. I'm calling you Reverend Holden.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure.
A pleasure. This is one of the few guys I met him. He was a good friend of Walter Ridley. He was the director of the D.C. Department of Corrections and the chairman of the D.C. Board of Parole and a good personal friend of mine. In fact, I was serving life, and me and Ridley, who was the warden, got to be best friends. The inmate and the warden, I could go out and talk to him. He'd let me go in the street and have dinner. Guys thought I was telling on everybody in the prison. And every time he looked up, I'm going out the gate, Walter Ridley taking me out with him. And I said, man, I ain't telling on nobody. Me and the man just all right.
Yeah.
How do you get to be tight with the warden and you an inmate? And you have the same relationship with you, Brother Holder. I mean, I respect you. I like you. We hooked up at Walter's funeral. And, man, we've been together ever since. And I want to say I respect you, I admire you, and I like where your heart's at. And there's a thing we got called the inner voice. When you meet somebody instinctively, you know whether you like them or don't like them, or something about them is from the good. When I met you, my inner voice said, you made parole, man.
Amen. Amen. You know, I always remind people that, you know, and I wrote a book, Can Any Good Thing Come Out of Prison, right?
Yeah.
And the fact that I wanted to raise that issue, because through my, you know, 27 and a half years of experience working, you know, I recognize that we have a lot of good people that made bad choices.
There you go.
And that's why we have to give them every opportunity for redemption, restoration, right? And
yeah.
And until we do that, and I see when we deliberately offer them true opportunity for change, the majority of them will embrace it. So I'll continue, you know, to fight for the least of those of us. Right. And most people say, why is a warden dedicating his life or his past life? You know, I've been retired now for 17 years, and I've been working in this space, trying to create opportunities for justice impact individuals to fulfill their true God, the purpose that God has for them. And by the way, I want the folks to know that our sister and Kichi is also a member of our committee. So she has some. You know, we're just so happy because, as you know, that that our sister is powerful.
Yes, she is.
And I've met her from the Justice Roundtable, and she did a hosting when I first released my book. And so I'm so grateful that she continued to serve as well, because, you know, we can go back and sit back and do nothing, right? But, you know, at some point, God is going to ask you, right, what you did from the beginning to the end.
Yeah.
I hope we'll be able to say we did well, and particularly we served the least of those of us. And so I'm so grateful and humbled by all the support, and to have a young person. I've been mentoring Venice, you know, for a long time, and she works in the system as well, and yet she's dedicating her work to making sure these individuals have opportunity for redemption and restoration. And I think that's a high calling, because typically the public sees those of us that works in the system as part of the system that creates the problem. But there's a lot of good people like Venice and others that want to see men and women be rehabilitated and be restored and come back to their families and take their rightful place in society. Yeah.
Right. Yes. And, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted you all to come on early, I know about the scholarships for our registration, but I'm really hoping that people in the D.C. community, there are a lot of phenomenal groups here that deal with formerly incarcerated people, that they can come together and do some fundraising for travel for folk to get to Ohio and get those free registration scholarships. And but, you know, the cross-fertilization is so very important and critical. And D.C., I mean, I got to just say, is basically a pace setter in the field of returning citizens, the D.C. area. It really would be good if, critical folk could be a part of the convening that's going to be in Ohio and share stories, share, all of those things. So I'm loving it. I'm hoping that folk, I'm not going to mention organizations, and you've had them all on the show, Roach Rail, but if they can get together some pennies for some incredible folk from D.C. to get one of those registration scholarships and travel up there to Columbus, Ohio in April.
Yeah. You know, if the conference is in April, and I'd like to say that we got enough time to do this again, to mention this, so folks can be aware of what's coming down. What is your objective, Brother Carlisle, in terms of holding this conference? What do you hope to accomplish or achieve from this conference? Because you did one a couple 18 months ago. In fact, we were in Virginia, and we were impressed with it.
Yeah, so we've been doing this, as earlier indicated, this is our fifth conference. Our first two was virtually during the pandemic, and then we had our first in-person one in conjunction with TD Jakes in Dallas, in Fort Worth, Texas, and then we did the DMV last year, and now in Ohio. But really, our goal and opportunity is to provide folks with information that can help in their restoration and rehabilitation. So our workshops cover eight areas. So we talk about job training, workforce development, faith, family. So we have eight categories that we're gonna have workshops, and I think this is the first time we've had way more workshops than we actually needed. So before we would repeat workshops on day one and day two. This time we don't have to do that. So that the word is getting out. The quality of the workshops, we got a few people from the DMV that's presenting, that was selected to do workshops as well. So it's really an opportunity to meet with like-minded people that provide true opportunity. So we're doing this because we really want to connect those justice impacted people and give them the information so they can continue to be restored and rebuild. Because as you know, everybody's at different stage as they return from our facilities. And we're hoping that those that are returning, like the ones that's going to be presented at, going to be able to attend from the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, will start planning. I always used to tell my folks, you can't The day you walk in that door is the day you should start planning for your release.
That's right.
And I tell folks that man may give you a sentence, but until God gives you a sentence, your life can be transformed. The gentleman that wrote the foreword in my book was doing life plus 40. And he got released, and people thought, like, you know, every time something good happened, everybody wants to think someone is snitching or doing something. He didn't have nothing to do. God just he had favor. And favor in fear sometimes, right? So I'm saying we got to be prepared, like every day is going to be our call, number is going to call. So that's what I encourage the men and women that is incarcerated, that's listening to your show. Listen, take this time to invest in yourself. Go get programs, get a trade. So when you know, save your money. So when you come out, you can have something in your hand, right? So, and I know you do a great job, Roach, you know, trying to help the older returning citizens that's coming out, you and Martine. So I appreciate the work that you all doing, and we really appreciate the opportunity. And thanks, Sister Nkechi, for affording us the opportunity, because when she came on, she said, hey, you know, I'll try to get you all on the show.
Nkechi can move mountains, man. Believe that. She can move mountains. Bernice, since the conference is happening in Ohio, are there any plans to have a male or female from one of the correction facilities in Ohio participate at the conference via FaceTime or Zoom or whatever? It's just an idea that since the conference is happening in that particular city, it seems as though we have somebody from that correctional system who is currently incarcerated to participate. Is that a possibility?
We're working on some things. Now, as far as participation, it is our goal. We will have some people who are there who have been recently released. One of the gentlemen spent 42 years in.
Wow.
You know, we have a little more wiggle room if they're out.
Okay. We understand.
We are working. And we're going to see what we can do, we can come up with.
Well, we want to thank you all for coming. We're running out of time. And
Can I just say one more thing?
Okay. Go ahead. Yes.
Sorry, before Nkechi, please visit us at www.nrcconference. That's nrcconference.org.
Okay.
And let me also add, we have a performing at our awards banquet. We're going to have Lige Jennings. And he actually was released out of the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Correction. So listen, there's a lot of information on the website. Every answer or question you have, you can go to the website of Venice and you'll get the answer. And if you send us a message, somebody will get right back to you.
Well, we like to join. We like to come there and report on what's going on with the conference for our listeners back here. So we'll be in touch to work out the logistics. But I want to thank you, Dr. Carlisle. Reverend Carlisle Hope.
And folks, I just want to say real quick that every single formerly incarcerated person that I know that has encountered Dr. Carlisle Holder has nothing but the highest praise for him and the work that he did when he was part of the Florida, I guess, Georgia, Florida, I think it was Department of Crime. I mean, they just sing your praises.
Yes.
It's an honor to be associated with you. That's all I just wanted to say.
And we echo the same sentiments, Nkechi, because when I met Reverend Holden and Reverend Walter really talked about him, some people you meet instinctively, you know that you like them. Their vibe says, come on in. And he has that kind of personality. It doesn't matter. He was a warden. That stuff don't matter to me. I've been tight with police, mass murderers, crazy men. It don't matter what it is. I like people. And when the vibe is right, the vibe is right. So him and the young lady, Bernice, thank you, lady. We appreciate you both. And we'll hopefully see y'all in April up at Ohio for the conference. We sure like to be there. And Reverend Holder, like, you like that title, don't you?
No.
www.nrcconference.org. nrcconference.org has all the information on there.
Okay. We want to thank you and thank everybody, I guess, Carlisle Holder, Bernice Robinson, Nikichi, my wife, Mertine, thank you all for tuning in. And if you got any questions or comments, you can call or write us at the station. We'd be glad to. And Bernice, we'd be glad to be in touch to see what we can do to help out anyway with the conference. Until next time, thank you all for joining us. And Nikichi threw me down, jumped on me, and made sure I get you on there, Rev Holder.
I love my sister. I love my sister.
We love her too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And remember, your inner voice is never wrong. Merry Christmas.
Well, it's about time for things to get better. We want the truth, and no more lies. We want freedom, justice, and equality.
Greetings. WPFW is pleased to announce the relaunch of our major donor program, now known as the Jazz and Justice Circle. If you gave $1,000 last year or so far this year, you are automatically enrolled in this cherished group of listener members, and we thank you. Benefits of your membership are at WPFWFM.org under the Support Us tab at the top of the homepage is the Jazz and Justice Circle. Interested in joining this select group? Please consider a donation of $1,000 or more online at WPFWFM.org. Your donation helps WPFW build a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, asking you to support WPFW. We ask you, please, to go to the website and make a pledge, maybe $47 or $470 if you can, or $47 a month, to WPFW.org. Hey, if you want to get dinner and a show in New York, if you want to bring a guest with you, maybe your partner or a daughter or son, a friend you want to meet up with in New York, watch the broadcast of Democracy Now! Live, 8 in the morning, sit on the set as we broadcast on over 1,000 stations, and then I get to personally host you for a meal, and we will toast WPFW, and it is an amazing time. We call it dinner and a show, you and your special guest. That's a $2,000 tax-deductible charitable contribution that goes directly to WPFW. Go online at WPFW.org. And by the way, you don't have to know when you can come to New York, where Democracy Now! Is based. Just make that call or go online at WPFW.org, make the pledge, and then we'll get in touch with you and work out the details. Maybe you're coming to New York soon or it won't be for a year. This doesn't expire because we don't want WPFW to expire. Again, go to WPFW.org. And thank you so much.
Do you have a car that you're not using anymore? Help your community radio station by donating your used vehicle to WPFW, where it will be sold at auction, and the proceeds will help keep your favorite Jazz and Justice station alive and running. The benefit? You get a tax write-off while supporting quality programming.
That's what I'm talking about.
For more information, just call 1-866-WPFW-CAR. That's 1-866-WPFW-CAR.
Peace, I'm DJ Underdog, inviting you to join me on Black Star Radio Mondays, 10 p.m. to midnight, beginning April 19th. We share the hottest sounds out of Africa from all corners of the motherland and bring you the sound of the African underground to D.C. and all points in between. Together, we'll explore African genres from Amapiano, Genge, Coupe de Calle, Zouk, Lingala, Ethiopian hits, Soukous, Nigerian hits, Egyptian hits, and Afro beats. The destination is Africa. Africa, and the mission is oneness. Journey with us Mondays at 10 p.m. right here on WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time. Peace. 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 Peace.
I'm Renee Bowser, a staunch trade unionist and host of a new WPFW program, Unionism Drives Community, airing Thursdays at 5 p.m. We will share the importance of knowing your rights in the workplace, the impact of unionism on working class advancement beyond the workplace, and how unionism can activate robust community among all of us. That's Unionism Drives Community, Thursdays at 5 p.m. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Climate Friday host Reverend Lennox Yearwood Jr. is but one of the black voices in climate and environmental